Good morning, Pile. 8 o'clock. Jim and Cake in today. Tyler Franson, Nipsey Hussle.
The afternoon snooze, which I understand was a subject that Peyton brought up yesterday.
Well, he actually brought it up during the game the other day.
Oh, God.
And he did not bring it up on the air during the game.
However,
Buckeye boy wanted to, and I go, no. Let's leave him alone. Let's leave my boy T. Franz alone. Let's leave him alone. Sometimes we all need to take a little nap. Sometimes we have to do that. It's okay. So he instead, Buckeye focused his comedic energies on JJ. Because I had mentioned that JJ's sister Robin Brown, who's on the CMU Foundation, I saw her talking with Miles Cochaver, the Mavericks' new football coach. When I was at the game, I went down to use the little broadcaster's room, and I saw them and said, "Hey, so I'm Miles down talking with Robin. They're at the game." And so that came up about JJ because of Robin, because of his sister.
Right.
But, yeah, Peyton did take a picture of you and send it to us.
Oh, dear.
So, come on, man.
And here's the thing. He's not the first one to do that. There are people in this building that have photographed, and it's not that hard to do so because
we got windows.
All of our studios are ceiling to floor windows and doors. You know, occasionally it's like a zoo in here sometimes. And so if on the off chance, and let's also say on the on chance, that I end up, you know, conked over on the desk. Well, it's easy to get a picture.
Like, you're a hardworking guy. And sometimes you just need to take a little afternoon snooze, which is one of your many nicknames.
Yes. So, thank you,
Believe
Peyton.
Me,
thank
there,
you.
There have been some mornings where I've wanted to... But at least you don't nod off during the show. Like we talked about, in the past, worked with guy Steve Barrows. Steve still lives here in town. Steve's really, really good colleague, outstanding broadcaster. Steve would fall asleep, though, during our morning show when he used to do the a morning news program over on KNZZ.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve would sit where you're at.
Uh-huh.
And I would occasionally have to. Steve would nod off, and I would have to
tap the glass
to wake him up. And
oh, yeah.
So for Stevie B, that was on occasion a little bit of a challenge. But at least now I have seen occasionally the head bob a little bit. And yeah, I've.
Oh.
Because you put in a long night before, you do stuff.
Yeah.
That happens.
That's,
but I've never seen you totally boom, just tap out, you're done.
That's what the old cold brew is for. This
exactly.
Morning, so.
So I have not seen you do that.
And you know what?
Yeah.
We're going to keep it that way.
Okay. I appreciate that. So here in a little bit, give you a chance to play our Triple Play Record Stadium Cinema, chance to win a downtown experience gift card to Triple Play, do a little shopping for maybe some disc golf gear, an album or two.
Some cool T-shirts.
Cool T-shirts, cool posters, just cool stuff in general. All kinds of really cool clothing down at Triple Play Records. Along with that, the gift card to Triple Play, you also get a small antipasto salad to Junction Square Pizza. So it's a little downtown experience, chance to win that coming up here in just a few minutes. Also, I believe we're going to talk with Sarah Brooks, the Mountain Bike and Music Festival coming up this weekend. So we'll talk with her about that in just a little bit. Also, Josh Hauser, the coach of Harford Community College out of Maryland, the Owls, coming back to Grand Junction for the first time since 2016, and JUCO Chairman Jamie Hamilton this hour on the program as well. All right, so it's 8 o'clock. We usually talk a little NFL, start the 8 o'clock hour. And so for the Broncos, Pro Football Focus, giving the Broncos a pretty good offseason grade. The grade that they gave them was an A. Free agency, above average.
I would say so.
Yeah. But of course, part of that was the trade involving Russell Wilson. And then the draft, they got a B+. the Pro Football Focus comments, few teams made a bigger move in the offseason than the Broncos, who finally found a franchise quarterback in Russell Wilson via trade. Last offseason, this roster was an elite quarterback away from contending, and while it isn't quite the same roster, they will be hoping that enough of the important pieces remain so the same thing is true. Critically, the Wilson trade didn't cost them any key components of the offseason other than tight end Noah Fant, and they have a replacement in-house in Albert Okwuegbunam. Adding Randy Gregory in free agency also gives them a legitimate pass rusher after trading away Von Miller last year. In the draft, Denver add another pass rushing specialist in Nick Bonitto, who owns the best pass rush win rate of any pass rusher in the draft class the last 2 years. Greg Dulcich adds depth to the tight end room again, and a sweet flow, by the way. Some sweet hair from Dulcich. Oh, yeah. And now Denver has to hope that it has the system in place to maximize Wilson. I think it's probably you got one of the better quarterbacks in the league. And I hate to want to hear this. Oh, Wilson's best days are behind him. Look how he played last year. He had the finger injury. If you look at his numbers at the end of the season, they were among the best in the league after he kind of got his footing back under him.
Right.
After the finger injury, his numbers were sensational down the stretch. Wasn't obviously good enough, and his team wasn't good enough to get into the playoffs, but he played outstanding football down the stretch last year. And so for those that are, oh, Russell Wilson's best days are behind him, let's knock that off. Is he
walking the brakes?
Is he walking into an easy situation?
No.
It's not. It's going to be the toughest division in the National Football League. But to say that he's done and his best years are behind him, and stop that. Stop it.
And something to just further hammer home the point, the team around him in Seattle this past year was nowhere near what it was when the Seahawks went to the Super Bowl. Right? They didn't, you know, he doesn't have... That the struggle was that the Seahawks did not have a running game, but they wanted a run-heavy style offense like they had when they had Marshawn Lynch. You know, Chris Carson's not a Marshawn Lynch type or whatever back they were plugging in, guys that were like coming out of the stands, it seemed like some days. And so they tried to do this run-heavy style offense. That didn't work. And when they
Which is part of the reason that Tim and Pete Carroll
had a rift.
Yeah, had some issues.
And look, when the whole let Russ cook thing was in its heyday, they started out great, and Russell Wilson had some great numbers. That started to decline, and that happens, right? It was the lack of adjustments made, lack of proper adjustments made on the side of the coaching staff, the lack of offensive line production, and a general not very well utilization of the team around him. This time around, he's coming into the toughest division in football, but he's coming in with Pro Bowl caliber receivers in Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick, and let's hope a not in trouble Jerry Jeudy. Albert O could be a solid tight end in the right system with the right quarterback. And Dulcich, everything I've read so far, says that he's really impressing the coaches so far in those rookie camps. And then you've got on the other side a defense that last year under Vic Fangio was top 10 and has still many of the same key pieces around it. And they've added guys. You know, Benito's a good pickup. In the draft, I think he's a solid second-round pick for Denver. You know, the guys that they've picked up, the two San Francisco guys, the Jones on the front line and Quan in the defensive backfield.
Williams, the slot corner, yeah, from San Francisco.
Thank you. You know, they've added pieces. They've built up this roster to be a contender this year. And I was watching a clip of Pete Schrager, who is all in on the Broncos, on Good Morning Football. And he said, look, you go back to 2019, 2020, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had Jameis Winston as their starting quarterback, and he threw 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions on a roster that, for the most part, stayed pretty much the same, except for they added Tom Brady, and they went to the Super Bowl. What did we see last year? The Los Angeles Rams, who went to a Super Bowl under Jared Goff. That didn't work out too well, but they added a lot of key pieces. They brought in some names, you know, your Von Millers. They kept guys like Cooper Kupp in shape. And what do? They brought in Matthew Stafford, won a Super Bowl. Teams and rosters that are right now that were middle of the pack, but clearly had potential, that just added that quarterback piece, went on to win a Super Bowl. Am I saying that's what's going to happen this year in Denver? I can't say for sure because the AFC West is a murderer's row this year. But this Broncos roster with Russell Wilson is leaps and bounds better than where it was last year. And I think that's ultimately what this season is going to be remembered for, is adding that key piece with a young, energetic coaching staff that's ready to take what they have and mold it and make a run for it.
Back to Wilson for a moment. Here's his last 17 games.
Okay.
This is the average numbers of his last 17.
Lay it on me.
He threw for an average of 217 yards per game, 7.5 yards per completion.
It's a little low.
He ended up, though, throwing 30 touchdowns, 7 interceptions.
Love that.
3,693 yards.
That's
and a 62% completion percentage during the last 17.
And that's the trick.
Yeah.
30 touchdowns, 7 picks. The touchdown to turnover ratio, much, much better than even Teddy Bridgewater or Drew Lock.
I'm just saying that you've got a guy that gives you consistent quarterback play.
Right.
Which they have desperately, desperately needed. And a guy that they hope will add to the arsenal for Russell Wilson is Greg Dulcich. It's a great story. Dulcich was a walk-on at UCLA. His high school coach played at UCLA, so he knew somebody that knew somebody, and so it gave him the opportunity to go there, but he had to earn a spot. He had to earn a scholarship at UCLA.
Right.
And he was able to do that, which, like I've said before, I love that about the Greg Dulcich story. But I also love the fact that tall target, got some size. During the workouts over at UC Health this week, has looked faster than people thought he looked on film.
Which was already pretty fast.
Yeah. As the Broncos are going through their OTAs this week. And so Dulcich has managed to turn some heads so far with what the Broncos have seen this week in regard to Greg Dulcich and what the kind of contributions he can make. Feeling is, guy's a very willing blocker. That's been kind of one of the knocks by him a little bit, but seems to be a guy that is willing to get better at that part of his game.
Right.
And in some ways, you know, he's 6'4", 245. He ran a 4.69 at the NFL Combine in March, but like I said, folks that have watched him looks faster than that. Can he be Denver's equivalent of Travis Kelce?
Let's hope so.
Boy, if he's half as good as Travis Kelce, I will pollute my britches with joy. I will. Might have to get a supersized depend for me, because I'm going to be that happy if I see him be half as good as one Travis Kelce.
The pants budget will be astronomical.
So, we'll see where this all plays out. But you know, a lot of the rookies, they're over there right now for the offseason workouts, the OTAs. Dwayne Stukes, the new special teams coach, excited about some of the guys he's going to get to enhance what they have in terms of their special teams talent.
Yeah,
Broncos special teams have not been very special.
No, they haven't.
The last few years,
it's not been good.
And so hopefully with Stukes and the rookies that they have, the talent they have there, will make those units a whole lot better. One other quick thing about Jerry Jeudy. You know, we had the bond hearing on Friday morning, after he was arrested last Thursday, for second-degree criminal tampering, which stemmed from an alleged altercation, which was nonviolent, with the mother of his one-month-old daughter. That Nathaniel Hackett said he met with Judy on Friday following the receiver's release. This is from The Athletic, by the way. Had an opportunity to talk to Jerry, and we're going to move forward with this. We're going to learn from it as a team. That's what it's all about. It's about adversity and how we respond to that adversity, so it's important. We've got to learn from it. And when asked if Judy could face any team discipline stemming from the incident, Hackett said the Broncos will look into all that stuff and make sure that we do the right thing. And that Hackett mentioned that Judy's been there participating in OTAs. So he was there yesterday, part of the Broncos getting ready to start the season.
And I do believe it's worth mentioning that the girlfriend or the baby mama, whatever their relationship is to them, I do believe I read somewhere that she has asked for no charges.
Right.
And when we were talking about it last Friday, this whole thing is just a mess, and it's really not a good look for either team. I mean, he screwed up, and he got in.
Well, yeah, and the fact that she felt like she had to call sheriff's deputies to be there in case something happened, that's not good.
No.
Number one, I'm glad there was no physical altercation. There was no excuse. There's no reason ever that a man should put his hands on a woman, that there should be ever any of that kind of. If you get that incensed about something, walk away, get in your car, drive away.
Step away.
And I'm glad it didn't get to that. It didn't escalate to that point. It just, from reading, though, it sure sounds like a couple of people acting extremely immature.
And you know what? That tells me they're bad for each other.
Yeah.
And they probably shouldn't have had a kid together.
And now they have a child together, and now they're, regardless of their relationship, works out long term, they're always going to be linked because they've had a child together, and hopefully both parties, regardless of what their relationship's going to be, they do the best for the child, and that's the number one thing. One other quick thing that Jerry Jones, he was on, he talked with Peter King, Football Morning in America recently, and remember the Cowboys of the 90s? Michael Irvin was doing coke.
I mean,
guys were getting arrested left and right, and there was dysfunction.
I personally don't remember that. I was, you know,
but I newborn. Do. And it seemed like every week the Cowboys had a story. They had some. It was a soap opera,
right?
It literally was Dallas, like the TV show back in the day,
like JR,
only with coke, and prostitutes and all these things that went on with the Dallas Cowboys. Every week was a story. I think they had what that was called, the White House. They had a place where they went and
partied
and stuff. And Jerry Jones told Peter King, let me tell you a story. A few years after I bought the team, I was out in Los Angeles having lunch with David Hill and Ed Gorin of Fox. At that time, there were a lot of negative headlines about the Cowboys.
Oh, boy.
Michael Irvin was in the headlines. People are saying, the owner's an outlaw. And so that day I told him, I'm tightening the lid on this franchise. We're going to get control of this team. And David Hill jumped up and he said, no, do not touch my boys. They are television gold. Don't even think about it. And Jones wanted to say, you know, the foibles, the soap opera. I'll stop the Jerry Jones now. The terrible Jerry Jones. The issues, they create interest. Add in the Senior Bowl, the Combine for agency, the draft training camp. We always got something going. Kind of speaking to a much larger sense.
Right.
Of the NFL being a, you know, year-round
juggernaut
that doesn't involve prostitutes and coke, that involves the combine and the draft and all those
the
things.
The schedule,
ballyhooed schedule release and everything, that Fox loved the drama. They had the NFC. The Cowboys were constantly in the news, and the guys at Fox, Hill and those guys, loved that. They loved the fact that they were America's dysfunctional mess.
That's, you know, bad press is good press.
And they were winning Super Bowls too. So that was part of it as well. All right. Time to move on this morning. We'll talk with Josh Hauser, Hartford community coach. They'll be coming to Grand Junction for JUCO. It's coming up in a moment. But with us right now, we got Sarah Brooks. And good morning, Sarah. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Been a while. Good to see you.
I know, you too.
So you're in because all things mountain bike, this is your purview. This is what you do.
Yes, this is Grand Valley Bike Month this whole month. And coming up this Thursday, we have the Bike Month Film Fest. And it's going to feature 5 to 6 short films all about mountain biking. And this kind of captures the spirit of mountain biking both internationally and locally. We do have a couple local films this year. One of them is actually created by a Colorado Mesa University student.
Very cool.
And then we have... So the cool thing about this film fest is that all the proceeds raised from the ticket sales is actually going back towards new trail development out at 18 Road. And this is kind of part of the big master plan for that whole land use area. And the tickets are $12. The doors open at 6 this Thursday. The film starts at 7. And we also have lots of door prizes to give away.
Can you give me an example?
You know, last year we gave away, one of the cool prizes was a stay in the tiny houses at Powderhorn.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. So I think we might have some similar stuff like that. And then a lot of, you know, hats and shirts and mountain bike shorts and things like that. Yeah.
And so where can people get information on this?
So you can go to our website, healthymesacounty.org, and click on the Bike Month tab. Or you can also follow Mobile Mesa County on Facebook and Instagram.
All right. Sarah Brooks with us today. It is Bike Month here in Mesa County. Also, there's the Mountain Bike and Music Festival coming up this weekend,
too. Yeah, that's coming up this weekend, Rides and Vibes, and they're going to have a community clunker on the 20th downtown, so that's always fun. Get your costumes and your junkiest bike, and that's really the best way to really roll into the weekend, I think.
So, all things mountain bike.
Yes.
And bicycle in general, of course, with Bike Month here in Mesa County.
Yes, and the other cool thing is that on the 19th as well, earlier in the day, so about 3 to 5:30, DT Swiss is opening up their facility. They're going to do a whole tour, teach people about wheel truing and hub maintenance. It'll be a pretty cool thing, and that's free.
Now, I know occasionally on the planet, you join Chanel on
I have been going on the single track report every week talking about Bike Month stuff.
Yeah, so 4:10 every Thursday for that, powered by Grassroots Cycles. We'll give them a little plug. And I guess very quickly here to wrap it up, maybe if somebody's listening that they've never mountain biked and they want to get into it, what's your recommendation for a rookie mountain biker beginner to get started?
So, well, I guess it sort of depends on if you have a bike or if you don't have a bike.
Let's say we're starting from ground zero.
So you don't have a bike. I would start by getting in touch with one of the different bike shops. A lot of the bike shops around here have group rides and they're all different skill levels. And so you could rent a bike from the bike shop, go out, do a ride. A lot of times they divide those rides out into people who are intermediate and advanced and then people who are newbies that those new people can go out and feel comfortable. And, you know, the big thing is you don't want to feel rushed going into some of those technical features. And I always say if you're a little bit weary at all about doing something, there's no shame in getting off and walking because walking today means you get to ride your bike tomorrow.
Exactly. live to ride another day instead of live to fight another day.
Exactly. And so another thing, too, is there's a lot of different groups and there's always clinics coming out here. So take a clinic. That's a good way to kind of learn the basics. Another thing, too, is to just go out on a gravel road. So I kind of think of, you know, 18 Road has some great gravel road. And then also if you go out by Cocopelli, Hawkeye Road, and just ride the gravel road and be comfortable with going uphill and downhill and learning how to shift properly and learning body positioning for when you're going downhill. I mean, shifting can be one of the trickiest things, especially when you're whizzing away and all of a sudden you hit this steep incline and you're not ready
you're not ready for it.
You're in for that that uphill incline. So, and I think sometimes that can be really frustrating for people, especially if you can't make it to the top and you have to get off and walk your bike. So learning how to shift and when to shift, I think, is one of the really important things, and you can practice that on gravel road and kind of get acquainted to that feel. I mean, obviously riding on dirt and gravel is much different than if you're riding on the riverfront trail. So you just want to kind of get adjusted to what it feels like holding the handlebars when you're on that different type of terrain.
Right. So if you want information about Grand Valley Bike Month, healthymesacounty.org, and about the event coming up on Thursday as well. Sarah, good to see you. Thanks for coming in today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Josh Hauser, the coach of Harford Community College, joins us next on The Jim Davis Show.
First of all, it's hilarious.
Warped, twisted individuals. Yes.
Yeah!
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team. It's time to talk Alpine Bank Junior College Baseball World Series on The Team.
We have three teams into this year's Alpine Bank Junior College World Series. One of them is Harford College from Maryland. They're coming back to the series for the first time since 2016. They're the Eastern District champions, beating Florence Darlington to come to Grand Junction. Josh Hauser is the head coach of the Fighting Owls. He joins us right now on the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line. Josh, I appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me. We're super excited.
Well, congratulations on winning the Eastern District title. You take down Florence Darlington with the 10-7 victory to come to Grand Junction, as I mentioned, for the first time since 2016. And you guys certainly were hitting the long ball really well in that game. Couple of grand slams with Trey Cruz, the guy that delivered that final big blast, that grand slam, the second of the game for your ball clubs. Like I said, it was, you guys were playing a lot of long ball the other day against Flodar.
Sunday was a crazy day. The first game, I think there were 40-plus hits amongst both teams. Obviously, that one didn't go our way. Ended up having to play game two, and we always like to make it interesting. So we were batting behind by about four throughout most of the game, and then bottom of the eighth, just Trey's been awesome for us all year, and just a big-time player that showed up in a big-time moment, and that was obviously the huge blow for us and allowed us to get the lead and then hold it in the top of the ninth. But it was a crazy day of baseball, two long games, hard-fought games, and obviously we couldn't be happier about the result, and we're just super pumped.
Josh Hauser, the coach of Harford Community College, joining us today on the Team Sports Network. And Braden Karpathos, 4-for-4, came a triple short of the cycle for you. And he also was your starting pitcher along with being your DH. He had a two-run home run to help your ball club get that early 2-0 lead. But Braden Karpathos getting it done on the bump for you and getting it done at the plate as well for you, Josh, in that victory over Florence Darlington.
Absolutely, yeah. Karp, as we call him, he's been terrific all year on both sides of the ball. I know on Sunday that outing on the mound wasn't probably what he envisioned or wanted, but his ability to kind of rinse that and just come back and put together really good at-bats for us during the game, obviously being the reason that we went up 2-0 there early in the game. But even late game, like a double to right center, single up the middle, I believe, worked on base all the time. He's been terrific all year, and kind of saw that on Sunday from him.
Josh Hauser, the coach of Harford Community College from Maryland, joining us. They're the Eastern District champions. And you look at your team offensively, Josh, 347 batting average. You mentioned how good Cruz has been, 357. He's at 14 home runs. Josh, is it Quelch or Joe Quelch, excuse me?
Yeah.
Joe Quelch, your freshman, he's hit 18 home runs this year. Quinn Madden's hit 12 home runs. I mean, when you look at, I mentioned the batting average, 347. But on the season, you've had 95 home runs. This has been a team that that home run barrage on Saturday was not a fluke. You guys have been doing that all season long, it sounds like.
Yeah, we've been swinging it really well throughout the entire year. There's obviously some individuals, Quelch, Trey, Quinn, to name a couple, that have been really, really big pieces for us. But I think just collectively, up and down, lot of home runs, a lot of extra base hits. That's kind of what we're looking for. We want to play for big innings. We want to be able to put up more big innings than the other team. But I think in between that, there's a lot of just really competitive at-bats. We had a ton of walks this year, and we were able to limit our strikeouts as well from what they had been in the past. And I think that gave us a lot of variability during games. There's not a lot of holes in our lineup, and it kind of allowed us to get through spots of the game without giving free outs to the opponent. I think when you can do a lot of damage but also produce good at-bats in between, I think that's the best balance an offense can look for, and I really think we were able to find that mold throughout the year.
Josh Hauser with us today. He's the coach of the Hartford Fighting Owls with us on the Team Sports Network. You're a former Fighting Owl pitcher yourself. You came to Grand Junction last time the ball club was here as a player. We'll talk more about that in a moment, but obviously pitching is where your heart lies. Your team is a 4.87 ERA, and looks like you've kind of, it's been a little more by committee because you have Zach Oswald has got 5 wins. Bobby Spencer's got 5 wins. Connor Blance has got 7 wins. Joe Clancy's got 5 wins. It seems like that the load has been pretty evenly distributed when it comes to the pitching this year for your ball club.
Yeah, definitely. I think we've had a couple guys who have really stepped up. Zach Oswald's been phenomenal for us all year. But there's just a large group of guys there that have been super productive, and a lot of them have filled multiple roles too. And I think that's super valuable to a pitching staff when you have unselfish players who really, really understand the concept of like just wanting to throw innings in different scenarios. And I think from a coaching perspective, when you have a lot of individuals that are open, to being able to throw in different scenarios, situations, different roles, and provide that flexibility, I think that makes my job easier and allows other pitchers to maybe settle into a more comfortable role themselves. So they've all played a huge part up and down the entire pitching staff. I think our numbers looked a little better before we let up 24 runs in the first game on Saturday, but
that didn't help. Yeah, no doubt about that.
they've definitely been awesome this year, and just collectively the entire group, they have a really good understanding of themselves, but also each other. And I think on an everyday basis at practice, obviously we see it a little more. But they've been phenomenal all year. They work extremely hard and just have a really good routine collectively, and know what they need to do to put themselves in the best position every day, so when game time comes, they're ready to perform.
We're talking with Josh Hauser, the head coach of the Hartford Owls, on the Jim Davis Show on the Team. Let's talk about your bullpen, Coach Hauser. What's that group, your bullpen, what's been some of their strengths, and how have they looked for your team this year?
I think the biggest thing that they've done, and we played a lot of close ball games this year. We played a lot of tight games, a lot of tense atmospheres. I think our bullpen collectively has come in and really not made the moment too big for where they're at. I think that's the biggest thing. A lot of those guys have come into high leverage situations, a lot of different guys in high leverage situations, and it always seems like they come in prepared. And I think that's the biggest thing is coming out of the bullpen, you're going to be thrown in numerous different types of situations. There's a lot of game variables that obviously impact maybe who you bring in or when you bring them in. But I think for the most part, whether they perform well or they don't perform well in certain instances, I think the biggest thing and the thing that we've seen the most is a lot of those guys come in and don't let the moment get to them. And I think that's extremely important. And obviously once you get to where we're at now in playoffs and however far each team makes it, I think being able to have pitchers that have put themselves in that situation throughout the year just prepares them for these playoff moments and these more higher leverage, maybe tense atmospheres or tight spots that you might want to put them in. And I think that gives them a little bit of ease knowing that they've done it before.
Hartford head baseball coach Josh Hauser with us today on the Team Sports Network. I referenced, Josh, that you were a pitcher for the Fighting Owls last time they came to Grand Junction. So that gives you kind of a unique perspective to relate to this current group of Fighting Owls about what it's like to come to Grand Junction and be in the Junior College World Series.
Absolutely. Being out there in 2016, that was probably one of the best experiences of my baseball career. It was awesome. I was actually hurt at the time, so I didn't participate in the World Series, but I think being out there, regardless of anything, is just one, an honor, but two, it's awesome. The atmosphere, the town of Grand Junction, everybody does a tremendous job, and we haven't gotten too in-depth with our current players. We had off yesterday. We have some practice today getting back at it, but I don't quite think they all know what they're in store for and how really just cool the entire week is leading up and everything like that. I really think they're in for a treat, and we're going to kind of try to run them through some of the things that I went through on the player side of it as well. But it's definitely kind of coming full circle for me, being on both sides of it now, and definitely just can't wait to get back out.
Hey, Josh, look forward to talking with you when you get out here. Congratulations to you and the Owls on the Eastern District Championship and qualifying for this year's Alpine Bank Junior College World Series. We'll have all the action starting May 28th on the Team Sports Network. Josh, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me. Can't wait to see you.
All right. Take care. Josh Hauser, coach of the Hartford Fighting Owls from Maryland, your Eastern District champions. All right, 8:39, let's get into...
We're into four down territory on the Jim Davis Show on the Team.
All right, start things out with first down. LeBron James scheduled to address how much longer he'll plan on playing. He's 37. He averaged 30 points and 6.2 rebounds in 56 games this past season. Pretty good for the old man.
That's pretty solid.
But he also had some injuries that forced him to miss time in 2021. And so that was the question, is how much longer he'll be playing. During a Twitter Q&A on Monday initiated by James, the 18-time All-Star was asked by one of his followers how many years he'll continue to play. LeBron didn't divulge any specifics, but he did hint that he's nowhere close to being done. He said, the way I feel I can go on for a while, to be honest, it's really up to me and my mental staying fresh and sharp. I'm still psycho-driven. Sounds like he does not plan on shutting it down anytime soon. So, if you're tired of LeBron James, well, guess what? He's not going away.
Not anytime soon.
Also, second down, when celebrities go out and throw out an opening pitch, the results can be mixed. Like famous DJ Steve Aoki, who threw out the first pitch at Fenway.
I saw that.
Lincoln Park, right? Wasn't he involved in Lincoln Park?
I believe so, yes.
So he threw out the first pitch between the Red Sox and Astros. And, it was being compared to the first pitch thrown by 50 Cent, remember?
Oh, God.
Quite some time ago.
Aoki
threw it over the catcher's head, and it landed in the netting behind home plate. It was not pretty.
Yeah, they were showing the video of that here on the MLB Network, and here it was...
Not good.
Not pretty.
Third and fourth down, those are yours.
Third down, something we have not mentioned, but a big congratulations to Jack Corrigan of the Rockies Radio Network last night, calling his 3,000th Rockies game last night. That's pretty impressive.
Of course, was a long-time broadcaster for Cleveland as well before he came to Colorado.
So very solid.
Congratulations to Jack. Super nice guy.
Fourth down. Mariano Rivera, of course, famous for the walk-up song of Enter Sandman by Metallica. How about this for a coming into the world walk-up song? A woman in Brazil was at a Metallica concert, and she'd had tickets for 3 years. And, of course, you know, COVID reshuffled, rescheduled. Well, sometime between her first purchase of those tickets and going to the concert last week, she and her partner decided they wanted to have a kid.
Okay.
She is 39 weeks pregnant at the Metallica concert, and guess what happens?
Enter baby.
Enter baby during Enter Sandman.
Oh, wow. You could not time that any better.
Oh, yeah.
I guess she could have. She could have been
probably.
Maybe in a hospital while Metallica was playing as opposed to being in a concert.
It was one of those moments where it got to a point where they were going to take her to the hospital, and then she was like, yeah, there's no time. It's happening now, and so...
Would have been great if Hetfield would have helped her deliver.
I think he did end up calling her later and be like, hey, congratulations.
Well, that's very cool. Very cool. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Alpine Bank Junior College World Series Chairman Jamie Hamilton joins us next on The Jim Davis Show.
I'm the morning guy. I have a Facebook group, 16 members. Some call it a fan page. I don't know.
Oh, hell yeah.
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team. It's time to talk Alpine Bank Junior College Baseball World Series on The Team.
With us on the Chick-fil-A Breakfast Team phone line, the chairman of the Alpine Bank Junior College World Series, Jamie Hamilton. Good morning, Jamie. How are you, sir?
Hey, we're getting ready.
We're getting close. It's getting there. It's getting close.
Yeah, well, I think last count, 5 teams and a couple more to have a chance today. And it's pretty exciting, that's for sure.
We have, as you mentioned, we have teams already in. Central Florida, they qualified, winning the South Atlantic. I got to get used to all the new name changes. I think I referred to it as the Gulf District the other day. But Central Florida, they haven't been here since 1998, Jamie. So it's been a while. So we get to see a team out of Florida that we have not seen in a very long time.
Well, what's interesting about that, I actually spoke with Marty Smith, their coach, and I read it on some of the releases, and it's 24 years, and Marty feels like part of the family, and I can't believe he hasn't been back here with his team, but we do get the chance to see him at Coach's Convention, and he promotes the heck out of Grand Junction in the JUCO World Series, so I'm very excited for him, and he has to, as we've talked about before, you and I, that coming out of that Florida is a very tough, strong operation down there. So it says a lot about what he did with his team this year. Pretty cool.
Yeah, Marty Smith, Hall of Fame coach. They had to come from mine to beat Miami-Dade 4-3 to get to Grand Junction for the first time since 1998. And then a team that it seems like they're here every year. That would be San Jacinto North out of Houston, Texas. They beat Alvin to qualify, and so Tom Arrington and the Gators back in Grand Junction yet again.
Yeah, I actually spoke with Tom prior to the weekend and told him that if he does come back, there will be city's going to pose a tax on how many times he's been here and living in hotels over the last 15, 20 years with his great leadership down there as well.
I always kid them that, and same with Mark Reardon at Iowa Western, they just need to build a house. They just need to build a big enough house for everybody to come here, and they could just come here and live, and they could rent it out, and, you know, Airbnb when they're not here, and they could just probably do that and probably save themselves some money on hotel rooms going forward.
Yeah, and I think if anybody knowing him, I think he would do that. I could see him coming back and helping after his career is over, helping the tournament live on and into the future. So no, it's good. He knows what to expect, but he also is very appreciative of what the committee does and the fans, and it loves obviously what the partnership they has with the Challenger teams, and just is very good for promoting all of us.
Alpine Bank Junior College Baseball World Series Chairman Jamie Hamilton with us today on the Team Sports Network, and we just talked with Harford Community College out of Maryland. Josh Hauser, their head coach, they're coming here for the first time since 2016. I thought it was kind of cool that the Josh Hauser, their head coach, was here in 2016. Unfortunately, didn't get to pitch in the tournament, but was injured, but got to be here and be part of the last time the Fighting Owls came to Grand Junction.
Well, and it's appropriate. The Fighting Owls, that's already pretty cool, but I do remember them. They made an impact. They had such great spirit and energy, and more than anything else, gratitude. I can't tell you how many times that all of their players thanked committee members and wrote notes at the end of the tournament, and the hosts that took them around town and up on the mesa and things said they were just first class all the way around on and off the field. So very excited for them and come back and contribute, because they won their game in a very exciting fashion as well.
Yeah, 10-7 over Florence Darlington. Hit a couple of grand slams in that game to qualify for Grand Junction for the first time since 2016. Jamie Hamilton, chairman of the Alpine Bank Junior College World Series, with us today on the Team Sports Network. And it looks like McLennan forcing that if game today. So Mitch Thompson's team, defending JUCO champions, they took down Midland to force that if game today. So McLennan on the cusp of coming back to the loser's bracket and maybe returning to Grand Junction to defend their title.
Yeah, and obviously one of those first-class guys we've met over the years in the Hall of Fame, and doing what he does has impacted a number of student-athletes' lives. And Midland, kind of a good story there, too. But just, again, that region's very strong. So I think we're going to see some really great individual performances, not to mention just the whole idea of winning a national title as well.
And then we have the Midwest, which will get started tomorrow. Number 2 Wabash Valley, they're hosting. They'll face number 9 Iowa Western in the second game tomorrow at South Suburban, playing John A. Logan in that double elimination tournament. We talked with Rob Fournier recently, Wabash's coach, Jamie, and if Wabash can come here, they can do something that's always a pretty cool thing. If a team can qualify for JUCO in the same year that their head coach is going into the Coach's Hall of Fame, and that would be the case if Rob can find a way to get his ball club to Grand Junction for the series.
That is always special. We had that opportunity down with Chipola and their coach, but obviously didn't get that final win that they needed. But no, those are special, and just another way to really enhance the legacy of what Grand Junction has developed over the last 60 plus years, and again, all the community support and just a baseball town. That's all you can say about it.
You mentioned Chipola coach Jeff Johnson. He'll also be going into the Hall of Fame this year, playing catch up with the past here with the pandemic and not having a tournament in 2020. We'll have what, 8 inductees coming up for the banquet on Friday night, the 27th. Correct.
That is correct. So, and we've got all their video presentations ready to go. No speaker, as we talked about with Jerry Schimmel, getting his new gig or his gig again with the Colorado Rockies. But it's kind of nice, the excitement just to get back out and see the players and mingle with them during a nice dinner, and then get them to appreciate the legacy that the Coaches Association has built, and then get ready to play at 9 o'clock on that Saturday morning.
And we'll have all the games right here on the Team Sports Network. Jamie Hamilton with us today on the Jim Davis Show on the Team Sports Network. And right now, tickets online only, JUCOGJ.org. And tickets, you need if you're planning to go out to the ball games, you need to get them right now at the website.
Yeah, that's correct. I did have a couple calls. I was out of town over the weekend, but I had a couple calls, still having some glitches, but our volunteers will follow up with them, and we'll call them back and make sure everything's ready to go. And Ben, walking around the facility, I don't know if you've had that opportunity yet. It's a clean, fresh look, and it's going to be fairly neat and exciting to get as many people as we can in there, and field looks good. It's nice to see the high schools having a chance to play over the weekend to some of those seniors and their career on one of the great facilities in America. So it's just, you can feel the vibe, Jim. It's really, really nice, and probably why we still have people on this committee that have been on the committee for close to 50 years. It energizes and re-energizes everybody, and everybody has a smile on their face when they do it.
Well, like you say, JUCO 2.0, right?
Yeah. Whatever that means.
I guess. Well, the new stands and everything. You know.
Did say it. I was just thinking, with all the new platforms, I think I have an iPhone 14, so I'm really behind the. Eight ball now on not updating JUCO years ago. So
it's
good. People have been very patient, and sponsors coming out of the woodwork to help us and want to be involved. So it's what's right about our community, that's for sure.
I know, Jim, we got like about 30 seconds here, but also I think it helps to feed the passion too with CMU baseball playing over at Bergman. They got the regional this week. That adds to the excitement for the Junior College World Series as well.
You bet. We've spoke with their team and their administration, and whatever we can do to promote that, hoping that they have host a super regional, and we can promote that as our video board, and people can go between places, park one place, and walk between both locations. It's pretty cool.
That'd be fantastic. Hey, Jamie, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Get your tickets now, JUCOGJ.org. We'll have all the games on the team starting May 28th. Appreciate it, Jamie. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, James.
All right. Jamie Hamilton with us on the program this morning. All right, coming up next hour, no Mav Day today because we're going to have our phone shut off from 9 to 10 this morning, but you can still text in today, predictions on the Avalanche series with the Blues, 970-242-1340.